The Man in Line, brought to you by NetZeroMatrix.com, the Isle of Man's main Net Zero Progress website.
Pastor Mike, good afternoon. It's 6 minutes after 12 midday. There was a big announcement yesterday morning. The Manx government unveiled a package of support for the Isle of Man through the winter months. Electricity prices capped until the end of March next year, and a comprehensive package of government support aimed at helping you and possibly your business through the winter months. Well, we just had COVID. That cost us a lot of money, so the Chief Minister is here today on Manx Radio, so let's see what the answer is and exactly what's happening. So, Pastor Mike, good afternoon, Chief Minister.
Good afternoon, Andy.
Well, a big, big decision yesterday. How long was that in the coming? How long has government been thinking about it?
Well, ever since Russia invaded Ukraine, clearly, there was a recognition there would be consequences, whether that was going to be food pricing or energy pricing. So it's something that actually we've been monitoring and engaging with in terms of discussing and looking ahead since March. But, you know, clearly the real-time impacts only become apparent at a later stage, and particularly, obviously, with Russia now starting to put the squeeze on and effectively starting to turn those gas taps off, then, you know, the real impact now, the real cost impact is being seen, and that's why we've now come forward with what we believe will be the base package to keep the island going this winter.
So just run us through, for the layperson, what exactly is going to happen?
Well, I think what the layperson wasn't aware of, and that we have been aware of for the last few weeks since we've been made aware by Manx Utilities, was that that electricity prices were going to have to rise by between sort of 70 and 90%. And in fact, it's looking increasingly likely it was that upper end figure, 90%. Council and ministers clearly concerned, very concerned about the impact of that across the community, across the economy, have determined now to intervene in the market, to freeze prices at the current levels, to stop this worsening crisis really having significant impacts across families, across businesses. So that is a major step for us to do that. And of course, we've indicated the cost could be up to £26 million. Okay. That's why we've recalled Tim Wald to come back on the 13th of September. And alongside that, we also have a number of other measures that we believe will act to support people. So we will be bringing forward further tranches of support payments, energy support payments, which we've already made one tranche of that. There will be a second tranche in October and another one in December. Those payments, which have effectively benefited those people who are receiving child benefits. So we've looked to protect families with £300 minimum payment for if you're getting child benefit. Other various support payments from £150 up to £300 for those on longer term benefits and pensioners. So we will be bringing forward another tranche of that, as I said, in October and December. And then we will be looking at other initiatives such as the bus fare initiative, where we'll cap bus prices at £2. And furthermore, there will be other community initiatives which we'll be bringing forward.
Okay. At the moment, I think Manx Utilities is 22p per kilowatt hour per unit. I think Manx Utilities said it would have gone up to 37.5p per kilowatt hour per unit. Do you know how much this is going to cost the public purse?
Well, yeah, I mean, we think it's up to £26 million, depending on price fluctuations. That's what the Treasury Minister will come to Tim Wald on the 13th of September to ask them to confirm their support for. That's the main cost at the moment. We have to start to consider where these types of costs are coming from, or how they are going to be paid back. As you know, COVID has had a significant impact on government finances. I mean, manageable, of course it's manageable. But we're getting into territory now, which is going to, obviously, inflation. It's a pernicious thing, inflation. It gets into almost every aspect of society, including public finances. So that's going to bring added pressure to a situation that we envisage recovering. over the next few years. But nevertheless, I think what the important thing is that, yes, we have to take considered decisions. I think we have to get back to some good old-fashioned economics and understand if we're going to fork out this sort of money, how we intend to actually recover it. But we are in a position to support the island through this latest phase. And obviously, like everybody else, to a certain degree, you know, we have an uncertain future, but to a certain degree, we've got to have some confidence that energy prices can only reach certain points before significant global impacts will mean that they have to come back down again. And really, that's part of our sort of effectively hedging our bets to a degree. But, you know, there's also, and I must make it clear, Andy, we do expect prices to have to go up in some form at the beginning of April next year.
Okay. We're with Alfred Cannon. If you want to get in touch, by the way, the lines are open. We've got lots of texts and emails to get through. But if you want to speak to the Chief Minister, call 66 13 68. You mentioned this has to be ratified by Tynwald. Are you anticipating any pushback, any dissent in this?
Well, as you know, a couple of weeks ago, we told Tynwald and told the public that we were recalling Tynwald to discuss the cost of living crisis, inverted commas, that we're facing. I do expect that Tynwald, or I hope Tynwald, will support this package in outline. Certainly, there's more detail to come, but certainly the initial core decision they will have to make as to whether to effectively loan the MUA up to £26 million. But I also, you know, there's a long way to run here, Andy, as well. You know, if we shoot our bolt before we actually understand further impacts, then you know, we could get ourselves into trouble. So we need to also have some patience. We clearly can see the this significant rise in electricity prices. What we don't know now is, for example, what will happen with VAT. We've got this Conservative Party election going on. We've got a new Prime Minister scheduled to take seat in early September, and promises of revisions and support, etc., to come through. So there's much more to potentially factor in here. This is going to be our base case. I hope Tynwald will get behind that base core support, and then clearly it's something that we're going to have to continue to monitor and deal with as this situation develops over the winter period.
Do you think this is going to continue as long as the Ukraine conflict continues?
Yes, I absolutely. I mean, this is that's fundamentally at the heart of all the problems that we have got at the moment. Albeit, you know, there was signs post COVID of economic fluctuations and inflation rising, etc. But nevertheless, I mean, really, this has brought to a head, you know, the level of increase in inflation. But it's this cost of energy, which is really then fueling inflation in other areas like food, for example. But we are acting to protect the economy. We are acting to protect people. And we have also got to be wary of now comparing ourselves directly to what's happening in the UK. So if energy price, the cost of unit cost of electricity at 22 pence turns out to be half that in the UK, we need to be carefully analysing the other impacts that this is bringing both to individuals, to households and the economy. And, you know, I'd urge people now not to get carried away with print stories which are focused on the UK in terms of these energy bills reaching sort of £4,000-£5,000 per annum. What we're going to do is to make sure we get hold of the facts, explain the facts to the public, and adapt our support to meet now what is going to be potentially a different scenario on the island, given we've now capped electricity at 22 pence per unit, and we expect prices in the UK to get up towards that 40 pence mark.
Okay, so let's go to the lines, and I think Alan's first with us. Hi, Alan, you're live with Alfred Cannon, Chief Minister.
Good afternoon, Minister, and good afternoon, Andy. I'd just like to ask you if you could clarify who these 15,000 extra people are going to be.
This is the plan for 15. This is the KPMG plan to say the population go to £100,000. 100,000 people. Sorry, Chief Minister.
Yeah. Thanks very much, Alan. I mean, obviously, we're looking ahead well into to the future here, and we set out a 15-year vision for the island, and part of that was that the population would grow, and fundamental to that was really going to be the working population, and we were targeting at that base, at that core of that 15,000, really 5,000 active working increase in the working population, and we are going to achieve that alongside our other financial targets around a £10 billion economy and £200 million more for the public purse. We are going to target that by looking for diversification, but also growth in our existing sectors. And alongside that, then clearly there will be the need to deal with all the infrastructure questions, etc., that will come from that as well.
Okay, Alan?
Did you say that 5,000 would be working?
Well, we went, I mean, I think that's the core base of this. I said 5,000 people, our target growth is 5,000 people more in work on the island, contributing to our economy by 2032.
Right, so the other 10,000 would presumably be family or whatever.
Well, I think we have to make an allowance alongside the fact that, you know, often it's not just single workers, yes. So, I mean, there's obviously some factoring in of families and family growth as well.
Would they not negate the 5,000?
Well, I think it's never quite that simple, and really we're going down into, very technical sort of economic analysis here, but you know, broadly we're targeting to grow the working population, and alongside that then there will be a likely growth in families and others alongside that. That by itself obviously is one aspect. The other aspect is the diversification of the economy, the other revenue that we're targeting from renewables to maximise our offshore opportunities. So there's a lot to factor in. I don't think you can just look at one side of what was presented and take it in isolation.
All right. Thanks for calling today, Alan. Got lots of people to get to on Man in Line today, but here's a note in from David who just said, could you ask Mr. Cannon, perhaps, why don't they just raise the income tax threshold to help low-income workers? Is this not a way? Does this help the poor?
Well, I think we have to look across the broader economy with what we are doing here. What we are doing, we're not just supporting families and individuals. We're also supporting the wider economy. We're supporting businesses. We're bringing certainty to businesses. We're giving people a fighting opportunity here to get through this. And I know it's difficult. I mean, it's difficult as it is. But it would have been twice as hard were those prices to have gone up by the level that's been indicated, 80-90%. So I think we're giving people a fighting opportunity. And by keeping, what I hope we will do is by keeping some money in the economy, some money in people's pockets, we will continue to give ourselves, as I say, a fighting opportunity to keep that discretionary spend going, keep businesses going, keep availability of people who are willing to go out and still do that extra shopping or go to the restaurant or go to the pub, and that'll help our broader economy through. And of course, for big business as well, you know, I hope that this recognition here that what we're doing, that'll help data centres, that'll help our bigger employers, our banks, our insurance companies, our digital facing businesses, you know, this will also help them. Right. Considerably, and I hope will also then vis-a-vis help attract additional business through as well. So there's a lot in this, and I think we have to think about, you know, strategically the dangers, of course, of just letting inflation run through certain parts of the economy. Is it still reduces the ability of people to go out and create that additional revenue, which helps and is so valuable towards businesses.
If you could, do you think the public, the layperson, do you think they completely understand the implications of what's going to happen? It's almost an element of phony war at the moment because we're 20 degrees outside. Very few people have got their central heating on the moment. Do you think people can imagine what those bills are going to be like? I mean, they would be literally double, wouldn't they?
Well, they would have been. They would have been double from an electricity perspective. And I accept, you know, gas customers are facing a significant challenge at the moment, less so perhaps than oil customers. So by itself, it helps in some areas. That doesn't take away from the fact that people are still having to cope with this, whether that's increasing gas prices, the increase in food prices, potentially in fuel prices. But it gives, as I said, it gives everybody fighting opportunity. And I also want to point out, Andy, it's not just that. You know, we have given, if you're our family with children now are under £50,000. You've already had one tranche payment of at least £300. There's a second tranche coming, and then there's a third being committed for December. So those families would have had nearly £1,000 in additional support towards their energy bills. And I appreciate it's not always a perfect science for everybody, because people. Spending habits are different, their debt levels are different, and of course some are on gas and some are on oil.
Okay.
But we are doing our very best, I believe, to ensure that we have provided that support. We've provided quite a lot of money into these different areas now, particularly for lower incomes, particularly for middle incomes, particularly for families. And by making this further step in relation to electricity prices, although people don't necessarily feel it, per se, in terms of the costs, we have shielded what would have been a massive economic blow to many, many people and families and businesses across the island.
Okay, Howard, you're live with Alfred Cannon, Chief Minister.
Good afternoon, Andy. Good afternoon, Minister. I listened with interest yesterday at the chap that was on from the MUA talking about water reserves, etc. And he seemed to have the idea that restrictions on the use of water over the years is going to be the answer to the question of water shortages. In the 1970s, our previous governments, they built what is now our saviour, the Sulby Dam. They did it in two stages, but at the same time, basically. If the government are encouraging up to 100,000 people to come to the island. Well, the chap that was on yesterday said they did a survey and it was able to support 90,000, but that didn't accommodate the dry years we've had. Is there any possibility, are there any ideas being moved around government to build another good-sized reservoir as a backup? Because if you've got the water, you can work around it. But if you've got to use restrictions, that upsets an awful lot of people, businesses, individuals within the island. Are there any plans for another reservoir?
I think what the important point here is that by determining a figure for what the future actually looks like, rather than government not determining such a figure, it means that we can properly design and build our infrastructure accordingly. So, for example, when you're building new schools, you can do so, I hope, by building in and factoring the factors, whatever that school's growth may be, and ensuring that if you've got to build extensions, etc., at a later stage, they can be properly considered. It means that when you're building new health facilities, or when you're looking at water or electricity, you're designing and building and creating for a future vision where you know what things are likely to look like in the future, rather than just sort of floating in the dark and arguing about what you think the population might or should look like. So I think when it comes to things like water, when it comes to water reservoirs, for example, as this is part of the MUA strategic planning, I am sure that the factoring in and the consideration of having to cater for an island that contains 100,000 people will be thought through. And when we come to capital spend, when it comes to water and water infrastructure, that will be factored in. We're likely to see some improvements or enhancements in terms of water storage.
But the questions that were put to this gentleman from the MUA pointed lots of times to reservoirs, old, new, and possibly newer. And each time, the answer came back was, well, we have the means to curtail the use of water. But, being an island man, the only water we have comes from the sky. And if we can collect that and store that, we have the ability to expand at a more comfortable rate than expanding at a restricted rate, which is not going to be conducive to encouraging new residents to come to the island.
Well, I fundamentally, I agree with your point. I think what I would say is that this will clearly now have to be factored into to the long term expenditure of the MUA, their strategic plans, and you know their job will be to provide the energy and the water and the sewerage infrastructure for the island into the future. And as I said, I think the helpful point when it comes to planning to expenditure of public funds for capital projects is that we have a vision for the future. We understand what the population is going to look like, and we can spend and construct accordingly.
Okay.
Have there been any approaches made to government from the MUA looking for the ability to build another fairly substantial reservoir to accommodate the expanding use of water on the island?
To the best of my knowledge, not at this point.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Howard.
Thanks very much.
To hear from you. A note in from Keith who says £2 bus fares, a step in the right direction. Just run that by us. What was the rationale for £2 bus fares?
Well, I think part of trying to deal with this energy crisis, accepting people are going to feel the squeeze in the winter, to try and give them other options, you know, to help them successfully plan. So by capping bus fares at £2, particularly for this is going to really impact on longer journeys, those who are commuting in to wherever, but let's take Douglas. So for example, if you're coming from Ramsey to Douglas, I think that the standard single fare at the moment is about £3.60. You're going to have that opportunity. We're going to cap the fare at £2. Then it's £1.60 or so saving for an individual on a single journey. Of course, you multiply that over a few weeks. If it's somebody who's commuting or travelling regularly, then you're into tens of pounds of savings, £40 or so a month.
This is from the 1st of November,
feasible.
Isn't it?
Yeah. And it just gives people an additional element of choice. If things are getting really tough, and particularly the winter, where we are concerned about, you know, people getting through, about low-income, middle-income households and what they need to do to help themselves get through this, this will give them an additional opportunity. And, of course, you know, if we get more people on the buses, then maybe this will turn out to be a cost-neutral initiative. But furthermore, it'll help people understand the benefits of public transport, and it will allow us then to consider how we could then further move forward with cheaper public transport, which we all want, which will also bring longer term benefits, perhaps by reducing car travel and go towards things like helping with our climate change targets.
Okay, the government's going to cap electricity at 22p per kilowatt hour. It could have been close to 40p later on this year. So there's the £2 maximum bus fares and energy efficiency. You're putting £8 million into energy efficiency. How quickly can that programme happen? What will it actually entail? Is it insulation in roofs?
I think fundamentally, yes. I mean, we need to move forward now with energy efficiency in homes, insulation, LED light bulbs, draft excluders, thermostatic radiator valves, a whole host, really, of improvements. And we need to bring that forward in more detail now. We see opportunity here to help people protect themselves, insulate their homes, obviously try and reduce their energy or increase their energy efficiency, reduce energy waste.
Which department will run that?
At the moment, that's very fundamentally going to come from DEFA, the Environment, right. Food and Agriculture Department. We will bring forward more details on this. I think Treasury Minister's keen to progress this. We have got the money available in terms of what we've already ring-fenced for climate change. This will contribute towards that, and that will also help people strengthen their existing homes from an energy perspective. I appreciate that's not necessarily going to help people this winter, but if we can get these schemes out, it'll help the economy, it'll provide work for our construction industry, and as I say, in the longer term, benefits will come home.
So typically what would happen is that somebody either puts in a quote and says, I need roof insulation, or I need some insulation around the windows, as you say, draft excluders. They'd submit that, or would a government inspector have to go in, and would it be a private contractor, or how would that happen?
I think we've committed to the high-level policy at the moment, Andy, as part of our response now to what's happening around us. And the DEFA minister will be bringing forward further details okay. on how exactly this money will be most effectively administered in order to ensure that people can get hold of it, and particularly those on who are least able to afford it can start to make steps to help improve life for themselves into the future.
Okay, Juan, hi, you're live with the Chief Minister.
Good afternoon, Andy. Good afternoon, Al.
Good afternoon, Juan.
I think we spoke a couple of times over the last year or so. I appreciate a lot of the stuff that's going on in our hands, and I'm sure that Russia are going to crank things up now, especially with the bio-warfare attack on some of their troops last week and the murder. So you can bet your life it's not going to get any easier for the immediate future. The electric, I take it, obviously, it's coming out of the person that's taxpayers' money that's going to subsidise the electric. So I take it as well that the big companies over here that are making a lot of profit, your poker stars and stuff, are going to benefit from this as well. So the taxpayers are going to be paying for that, I would imagine. But I'm listening to some of the backbenchers that have been talking recently, John Wonenberger, Tim Johnson, Stu Peters. There seems to be a feeling there that they can't make any headway with anything that gets done because it's a closed shop with the Council of Ministers. I understand that you know, to make progress, you need to be singing from the same hymn sheet. But also, these people are elected by the constituents to try and put stuff forward. So I think it's frustrating from their point of view and listening to what they're having to say that things are not getting done at the moment.
Specifically what, Juan?
Well, I mean, obviously I'm limited for time here, but if people want to go on and listen to their interviews with Paul Moulton, with Tim Johnson, John Wonenberger, they're finding it difficult to make headway with what they're doing. When it comes to the greater scope of things, and we know Comin is a kind of closed shop for whatever reason, whether it's good or bad. Like I say, I really took my time talking about that. I mean, obviously what goes on in Comin is a lot to do with the running off the island, and I don't find it kind of helpful that you have someone like who's happy to call himself a leftist tree hugger in charge of green agendas. If you want fair play and balance, I think you need to be looking at, you know, another approach on that. And a lot of what's going on now is this forced agenda to put the green issue through, if people actually study and read what's going on. My question after all that to you is, obviously there's a forced pressure on farming. We are a big farming community here and fishing community. The biggest thing we have in a wartime area, and we are coming into a wartime area, is food, fuel, heating and water. So I wonder what government's agenda is for the future of agriculture here, in so much as support, looking at what's going on around the world and how government are interfering and stopping agriculture working at its best. We have an increased price in fertilizer, which is a crazy price. And I've asked this question before, and I don't know whether you know the answers to this, Alf, but I've said, you know, we've obviously got a problem with seaweed on the island, and we have a guy getting paid thousands of pounds a year and a tractor to push it back into the sea. Why can't that be used by the farmers to help them with their fertilisation?
Okay, all right, Chief Minister.
Well, I'm not an expert, so I can't really. I'm not sure how seaweed works as a fertiliser. Okay. So I'm just going to push that question away because I don't understand that. I think the broader question, first of all, food security was clearly highlighted in our island plan. It's taken on even more importance for us as an island, and we do need to understand and support the farming community to ensure that if push came to shove and there was a increased crisis, as you allude to now with Ukraine and Russia, that we have the ability on the island to feed ourselves. So that is fundamentally important, and indeed there will be more debate about food security over the coming months in Tynwald. It was clearly highlighted in our island plan, and we will ensure that we've got some views to, you know, comfort the public that in the case of a crisis we are able to feed ourselves. So that is important. I think farming and the support that farmers are getting, I mean, absolutely, you know, We recognise that obviously there is support currently out there at the moment in terms of the payments, the direct payments that that farms and farmers can get, albeit they've been changing over the years. And also, of course, we do pay significantly to subsidise parts of the food chain, such as the meat plant. And that's been a big cost to government over the last couple of years. But nevertheless, many of us recognise that it's absolutely fundamental that we have some form of slaughter facility on the island. And we're going to need to keep working at that. So farms and farming and food and agriculture remains a significant part of our plans, and we need to keep working with the farming community, as the DEFA minister is doing at the moment, to understand how best we can continue. But there are a lot of pressures out there, cost pressures, that we are, you know, it's very difficult for us to be able to compensate for. For example, the cost of fertilizer, the transport costs associated, not just with farming, but with anything that's coming onto the island. So, for example, other actions that we're taking behind the scenes. So I know the Treasury Minister's going down to meet with the steam packet in the next week or so to just discuss and understand how their transport costs are impacting on our costs, food costs, for example, and supply costs coming into the island. So all those sorts of actions need to be undertaken, and we're going to continue to work at it.
Okay, all right. We're running short of time, so we'll get back to the phones in a moment.
The Mike's Motors summer sale is now on.
We are number one. We are family run. Mike's Motors. Mike's Motors.
Don't miss the Mike's Motors huge summer sale event. Save on cars, save on commercials, save on campers and motorhomes too. But be quick, at these prices, once they're gone, they're gone. Don't miss out. Click mikesmotors.im. Call 823-200. That's 823-200.
What's too hot in summer and too cold in winter? Your conservatory. Well now, Phoenix Windows can convert your conservatory roof with a solid, lightweight, insulated roof to turn your conservatory into a room you can comfortably use all year round. Phoenix Windows, for free estimates, free surveys, bespoke made-to-measure windows, guaranteed work, and all-island coverage. For your free, no-obligation quotation, call 816628 or visit phoenixwindows-iom.com.
Concerned, confused, or curious about climate change? Want to do your part? Then visit netzeromatrix.com, helping businesses and individuals understand the net zero targets that government has set, how they'll be achieved, and what impact it will have upon us. Plus, get practical advice and tips for saving energy, the options available for switching to renewable energy technologies, and much more. We all need to do what we can. So visit netzeromatrix.com and join us.
The Man in Line, brought to you by netzeromatrix.com. The world's leading carbon register and validation ecosystem.
21 minutes before one. David, you're live with Alfred Cannon, MHK.
Hi, Randy and Mr. Cannon, Chief Minister. Can I just ask if you would comment on this regarding access to ministers, access to the Chief Minister? You still have briefings like they did years ago. So if any political member wanted to chat to somebody, whether a minister or yourself, they are available, and you still have what I would call, in my term, was confidential briefings. Can you just give us a confidence that you still do that?
Look, you go back to the point that was just raised, I think, by the previous caller, Drew and David. It's not, I mean, I had to sort of kick back that this is a closed shop. The problem, I think, for some people, and I understand that having sat on the backbenches, is that these sorts of decisions are made. They're difficult decisions, but council ultimately has to make these decisions. And it's very difficult to make those with, you know, in a group of 33 people. You know, we have to narrow that down. That's what the council of ministers have been given the responsibility to do. But it is not a closed shop. People, Tim Ward, as you know, is a very open environment. If a member wants something to be achieved, they can move a motion, Andy. Yeah. They can lay it down in black and white exactly what they're frustrated with and what they want to happen. And what we're finding quite a lot at the moment, lots of criticism, but very little in the way of solutions that are properly costed out and understand and you know, tell us where the money is likely to come from. So it's very important, I think, that it's not just about you know, good ideas. We need to understand how these sorts of things are funded as well. But David, your point. People write, they talk to us, there's No minister I am aware of has rejected meetings with backbenchers, but broadly our doors are open and we're willing to talk. And in terms of briefing, sometimes we have to brief Tim Wald as appropriate as to what our future intentions are, or to come to them and ask them for their views on certain subjects so that we can factor those into our thinking. But Tim Wald, the debates in Tim Wald, the debate that we will have on the 13th of September when Tim Wald is recalled, will clearly outline, for example, the response packages, and gives Tim Wald members the full opportunity in public to criticise, critique, bring forward ideas, express their views.
Yes, and just on the question I was really going to ask was, regarding the MEA and the Water Authority were combined some years ago now, there were substantial Water Authority bonds which were going to mature in their future years. A, do they still exist? And I know you won't know what the value of them at the minute is. Won't they assist to pay the $26 million back?
We've loaned, yes, as you quite rightly allude to, if the full extent turns out to be £26 million, then we will have to factor that into the long-term plans for the MUA. They've already absorbed, David, some of the increase in costs that has been coming through over the last 12 months. And of course, there is a real concern now, having capped energy prices, if they don't start to come down, then we've got to manage that process again through another 12 months. Factor in obviously some increase of to the public, but we'll need to make some allowances, and of course we could have increased further costs as this whole situation unravels over the next 24 months.
This is a loan to the MUA,
the MUA were due basically to repay their lending in about 2032. There was a full business plan laid out. In fact, what happened 3 years ago, very quickly, four or five years ago, 2017, we wrote off £96 million of debt. We stabilised electricity prices on the island. We set out a financial plan for the MUA. That plan now is rapidly going out the window, and we're going to have to readjust it, David, and review it and make clear then to people how the MUA will regain its position, its secure financial position into the future.
Okay.
But if we don't act now, if we don't undertake this, then the economy is going to face substantial pressure over the winter.
Okay, thanks, David.
Good to hear. Cheers, boy.
Thanks for calling today. We're with Alfred Cannon, MHK, the Chief Minister, talking about the support package that's going to support various sectors of the economy on the Isle of Man through the winter. And just to reiterate, so that this is a loan to the MUA, to the electric, and how much was it again?
Up to £26 million. There's our estimate for until the 1st of April next year.
Okay, I don't want to be a harbinger of doom, but if things go on like this, how much could it go up to?
The electricity price
in
the future? Mm. Well, as I said, and it's very hard to know. I mean, put it this way. A year ago, the wholesale price of electricity was at 80 pence a unit. It's now at 500 pence. And it continues to hover around that mark. We just don't know. Russia, as I said, is turning off the taps. They're putting the squeeze on. The chickens are coming home to roost across Europe. We've got other questions also around energy security over the winter. I think we're in a good position. We're examining that as well as part of our consideration of how the island will get through this winter. But also in amongst all this, all this uncertainty and huge speculative prints of costs and things that are coming through in daily newspapers and all the rest of it, I think we need to be careful we don't get ourselves or talk ourselves into a position where the situation is worse than it is. £26 million will support energy prices. We'll freeze. We're capping the MUA. We're bringing forward additional support into households, Andy, which could mean up to £1,000 for those households who are receiving child benefit and have an income of under £50,000. We're going to cap bus fares. We're going to bring forward more community support. And we are going to continue to monitor and evaluate the situation as it unravels over the next 2 or 3 months.
Okay, back with Chief Minister Alfred Cannon.
With the global rising gas prices, some people may be worried about paying their gas bill If you are concerned about your own bill or someone in your family, please contact our friendly team at Manx Gas on 644444. We offer a priority care scheme and energy saving advice, so do get in touch with us to see how we can help you. Give Manx Gas a call on 644444 and we will do all we can to help.
Are you calm in a crisis? Do you have some spare time each week? Do you want to make a difference? Then you could be just the person we're looking for at St John Ambulance. We need trained first responders to be in the community, able to respond to a medical crisis while the ambulance is on its way. Full training will be given. To enrol, call St John Ambulance on 674 387 or find us on Facebook. St John Ambulance, keeping the heart of the community alive.
In our quest to remove all single-use plastic from our milk packaging, Isle of Man Creamery cartons, including the new 1.75-litre carton, are now 100% recyclable, made from sustainable and renewable sources. We're the first in the British Isles to offer these new large cartons, and you can pick them up now in local retailers or add them to your Isle of Man Creamery doorstep delivery. Plant-based cartons from Isle of Man Creamery. Better for the environment, better for you.
These days, we know you can run your business from anywhere, and virtual meetings are fine, but there are times when you need to talk to someone face-to-face, especially when it comes to accountancy services. We also know that the Manx Mile is actually 3 normal miles, and if you live in the north, a trip down south can take all day. So now, Shimin Wilson has opened a satellite office in Ramsey for the convenience of clients in the north of the island. To arrange an appointment in Douglas or Ramsey, contact us online or call Shimin Wilson on 627744.
Man in Line, brought to you by netzeromatrix.com, your one-stop shop for advice on renewable energy solutions and other green initiatives.
I've got a message in here from Graham, who says, could you ask the Chief Minister, bearing in mind comments by Mr. Wannenberg about Manx Gas, is buying Manx Gas on the table at any point?
What? No, it's not. It's not something in our plans. We know that gas has a very limited future from a climate change perspective. We've set out our plans for renewable energy, 20 megawatts on island by 2026. If we can bring that forward, we can, but there are no plans to buy Manx Gas.
Okay, a message in from Paul. It's a question just saying, surely this is the time now to rush ahead, his words, rush ahead with the Kroger plan for gas off Mackled.
Well, that's in the hands of Kroger, one can envisage that they must surely recognise what opportunities are in front of them in this current position where there is so much pressure on gas supply, but it's a private business. They've got certain criteria to fulfil. They've got certain dates to fulfil it. I wouldn't be surprised if they were looking to speed up, but it's not in government hands. That's in the hands of the directors of Kroger.
Government's not standing in the way with timetables of surveying or anything?
Government has set out the timetables by which certain aspects must be completed. If Kroger can do that sooner than the timescale, then good for them. And, clearly if a gas supply became available to the Isle of Man, and we've negotiated a cost cap with Kroger of, I think it was 80 pence, then in the current market conditions, it would be foolish for us to ignore that. But Andy, that is not as I said, that is not within the government control. That isn't within the control of Kroger.
Okay, if you go to consult.gov.im, the government wants lots of response from you. In fact, it's probably one of the most used websites on the Isle of Man. And on consult.gov.im, I've been guided to this by Steve. And one of the questions, Chief Minister, says, the NI fund and reserves are currently invested commercially. There's scope for some of the NI funds to be allocated to commercial projects in the Isle of Man. This will need to be a commercial investment with commercial returns, such as key public infrastructure with a guaranteed income. And you ask the public, what are your views on the potential for the government to use reserves and or the NI fund for that purpose? What's behind that question?
Well, fundamentally is that we've got £1 billion or so in our National Insurance Fund. We're very careful with that money. It's very dear to the public. We know that pays certain benefits, but very importantly for a lot of people, it secures their pensions, their state pensions. But that money is put into the stock markets and handled by our investment managers, and really to a certain extent, you know, benefits other people and other countries in terms of where that money ultimately finds its way through in terms of businesses and investments, etc. We are questioning whether there is public support to actually change some of the investment criteria to say, for example, deal with infrastructure on the island or building on the island where there is a clear return to the public purse and it meets certain criteria. And, you know, the fundamental principles are, why are we, I guess the question is, why are we investing externally when we could be investing internally, both to benefit the National Insurance Fund, but actually more importantly, to create this sort of vibrancy and regeneration that we all want in some of our towns.
Hypothetically, what sort of projects?
I don't want to overly speculate, but for example, if there is a housing project that the government feels it's appropriate to build on government land, or wants to come into a private-public partnership to make something happen, then and it's producing a return of say 4 or 5%, then what, you know, why wouldn't we, or why shouldn't we consider that in terms of putting in a stake and getting a return back?
Okay, let's go to Neil. You're live with the Chief Minister. Neil?
Good afternoon, Andy, and good afternoon, Mr. Cannon. This KPMG report, which I've sort of heard all about and I've read little bits of it, it seems to be entirely focused on the needs of the Chamber of Trade and Commerce and business growth. There is no consideration whatsoever for quality of life for local people on this island, none whatsoever. I think... And the people I've spoken to are absolutely horrified at the thought of increasing the population. We're obviously under pressure with water, and I know personally we are under pressure with discharge of our effluent at Mary Veg and the other sites around the island. And there seems to be an idea that by increasing the population, the tax take will actually pay for the services. But then, of course, we end up in an economic spiral where you have to increase the services to provide facilities for these new people coming in. And then, of course, you need even more people to pay for those services. And I know from experience that somebody comes in on a key worker post with their wife. Fair enough, it was a teaching post. It was a teaching post, in fact. And they now have two children, that's fine. But they now have six elderly relatives who are over here. They are the support network for the wife and the husband to work. And between those six elderly people, they own five houses, which are rented out to Young Manx people. I think it's appalling. I think the Young Manx people on the island have been absolutely left behind and totally ignored. Government could legislate and really stop this dreadful practice of buying up new build properties en bloc and renting them out to young people at extortionate rents at the stroke of a pen. There's absolutely a huge fallback in the quality of life for local people. It might be nice and quiet living out at Michael, but I can assure you, trying to get from Port Erin into Douglas any day of the week at any time, it's like being on the M1. And when we talk about food security, which I listen to this program intently, we look at food security. When I now go up to the top of South Broome and look down on the Southern Plain, which contains some of the richest alluvial soils the island has, all I see is concrete and housing estates. And where the Kringle Reservoir used to supply water for the entire south for most of the year, it now would probably only last five or six weeks, if that. I think this notion of increasing the population is absolutely crazy.
Well, thanks very much, Neil. And absolutely, you know, fine. I respect your views, but from my perspective, I think from the Councillor Minister's perspective, sitting and standing still with the forecasted demographics that we've got is not an option for us. We need to take action. We also recognise there are various parts of the island that have for years needed urban regeneration that we are falling behind when you go and compare ourselves to other parts of our neighbouring jurisdictions, and that actually creating a more sustainable island in terms of the demographics, creating a more sustainable island for people who are investing in retail and hospitality businesses, creating a more sustainable island in terms of the investment needed that will help regen these areas are all part of our thinking. And, you know, I agree, there are lots of problems that we need to solve whilst we are on that journey. And, for example, none of us want to see the Green Island concreted over and turned into a massive housing estate. But that's why, as part of this, we also have this vision, you know, of regenerating parts of Douglas, say, for example, where we can build more housing, we can encourage people back into the towns, we can create that added vibrancy. That in turn will lead to more diversity of jobs. You talk about the young. Many of the young often say to us that they don't feel that vibrancy and that they get that in other areas. But it's not just about that. It's opportunities that they need. They need those that diversity. And that's also part of this plan. And Neil, I would love you to see you on the 20th and 21st of September at the government conference. We've got this conference, we've planned for it. It's at the Villa Marina. You will have the opportunity to speak to me, to other ministers, to listen to in-depth debate on some of these subjects. It would be great if you come along to that. And I'm hoping you'll see the details of the tickets very soon.
Okay, we've been with Chief Minister Alfred Cannon. We got through about 10% of what we wanted to talk about. So the open invitation, will you come back before Christmas?
Andy, it's always a pleasure to speak to you.
Thanks for being with us today, Chief Minister Alfred Cannon. If you want more information, you can go to manxradio.com, go on the news site. All the details of this package of support for the Isle of Man through the winter and what's happening with the electricity price. Now going to be frozen at 22p per unit through until the end of March. Now, if you want to comment, answer phone 682631, and we're back with an open line tomorrow.
WINT